Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. Live from Bonn, Germany, I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr. Don't forget to join the debate live on Facebook. Coming up, Cameroon's army rescues 18 hostages, including foreigners.
Les 12 touristes sont parmi nous grâce à la collaboration.
The 12 tourists are with us thanks to the collaboration between the population, self-defense groups and the military.
And Sierra Leoneans are getting impatient over the delay in announcing election results.
People are afraid. Every political party, I mean the APC and the SNPP, are claiming victory in this runoff election.
Delay is dangerous. Like for us, the business people, everything stands still.
Stick around for these stories, and of course, we invite you to join us for a live debate on Facebook on the stories we'll be covering.
But as always, first, let's find out what's been happening around the world.
My name is Jane Nyingi with DW News. We start off in Cameroon, where the government says security forces have freed 18 hostages who were kidnapped by separatists fighting for the independence of English-speaking regions. 12 among them were European tourists, 7 Swiss citizens and 5 Italians. The government spokesperson Issa Bakari said residents helped the military locate the hostages whose vehicle had been seized while they were visiting a lake in Mount Manegouba National Park, about 300 kilometers from the capital, Yaounde. He referred to the hostage takers as terrorists.
I would like to congratulate the traditional rulers and the civil society because the government knows that all of them are fed up of being brutalized by those terrorists. The commitment of our nation has been to be united, ready to move forward in sharing our common vision to live together.
Russia, Turkey, and Iran have agreed to speed up efforts to ensure a ceasefire in Syria and protect civilians in de-escalation zones. Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan, who hosted Russian leader Vladimir Putin and Iranian counterpart Hassan Rouhani, said they agreed to work together to reduce the violence in Syria. Now, in retaliation for the new tariffs imposed by the Trump administration, China has imposed higher tariffs on more than 100 U.S. products, including aircraft, cars, and soybeans. More than half of U.S. soybeans exports go to China, meaning that the farmers, most of whom voted for President Trump, are likely to be hit the most. China is yet to announce when the tariff will take effect, but Deputy Commerce Minister Wang Chuen said they want the current dispute negotiated under World Trade Organization rules.
There will be no winner in a trade war. This is why, as a responsible country, China is willing to, on the basis of equal consultations and mutual respect, to deal with disagreements between the two sides under mutually agreed on WTO rules. However, if China's interests are undermined and its economic security is threatened, we'll take all necessary measures to safeguard our interests.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has approved the release of $1 billion US for the procurement of security equipment to fight the Boko Haram insurgency. President Buhari also asked security chiefs to intensify efforts aimed at securing the release of Leah Sharibo, the Dapchi schoolgirl still being held by Boko Haram because she allegedly refused to renounce Christianity. And now to your sports, and Cristiano Ronaldo has admitted his stunning bicycle kick in Real Madrid's win over Juventus on Tuesday evening was probably the best goal of his whole career. Ronaldo earned a standing ovation even from the home fans at the Juventus Stadium after his acrobatic volley beat a Real goalkeeper in the Champions League quarterfinal first leg. For more news and information, visit our website dw.com or our Facebook page DW Africa. My name is Jen Nyingi.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Crispin Mwakidale. Thanks for tuning in.
Now, Cameroon's government spokesperson Issa Tchiroma Bakary has announced that the army has freed 18 hostages, including 7 Swiss, 5 Italian tourists, and 6 locals who were kidnapped by English-speaking separatists in the southwest region. Take a listen.
Les 12 touristes sont parmi nous grâce à la collaboration.
The 12 tourists are with us thanks to the collaboration between the population, self-defense groups, and the military. The synergy between all of them made it possible for the hostages to regain their freedom. Many of kidnappers were neutralized.
Beaucoup de preneurs d'otages ont été neutralisés.
Now, they had been abducted on Monday and were freed hours later by the army's elite rapid intervention battalion. Local reports suggest that residents helped the military locate the hostages whose vehicle had been seized while they were visiting a lake in the region several days earlier.
Now, I spoke to DW's Moki Kinzeka reporting from Cameroon and started by seeking the events that led to the hostage situation.
Now, if you remember very well, President Paul Biya declared war against terrorists. That's about 4-5 months ago. And the military went and was cracking down on the civilians, cracking down also on suspected armed terrorists. They were not well equipped, so they resorted to hostage takings. They started with the administrative authorities at local level. Then it gradually moved on to regional officials, and then moved on to workers from the French-speaking zones of Cameroon who are transferred to work in the English-speaking regions.
So we know that 18 hostages have been freed, right? Including 7 Swiss, 5 Italian tourists, and 6 locals. Are there any more hostages that are yet to be released, or what's the situation there?
There are about a dozen hostages that are still held on the southwestern and northwestern border with Nigeria. The spokesperson for the government of Cameroon, the Minister of Communication, Issa Tchiroma Bakary, said the military is doing everything to release those hostages. We hear some of them are traditional rulers who have been seized by the armed separatist groups.
So definitely seems the government is committed to this. But moving on, the government has blamed the so-called Anglophone separatists, which it calls terrorists, for the kidnappings. But this group has denied any involvement. What are the freed hostages saying?
When the hostages came, they were looking hungry, tired, unkempt, and you could see that they were stressed up. But they did not grant any interview to any media organ.
So is it clear to say that it is not certain which of the so-called separatist groups actually conducted the kidnappings?
Yes, it is not clear because, unlike in the past, some will come and claim responsibility. But with the 18 people, that is the 6 municipal councillors and the 12 Italians and Swiss nationals, nobody claims responsibility.
Now, before you go, Moki, what happens now to the freed hostages?
The freed hostages were taken to hospital to be treated, and return travel formalities are being conducted with the various embassies so that they can go back to their countries.
That was DW's correspondent Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé.
And Eddie, as you can imagine, these stories always gets a lot of reaction on our Facebook page. We have Prince Young who says, that's a lie. Tchiroma, that's the government spokesperson, is a big criminal and a professional liar. Big accusation there.
Interesting one too. Menti Vestbeck says, Cameroon government is trying to paint the separatist movement black to gain international support.
And Atangana Ibrahim says, Cameroon is lying. It's a government strategy to tag English speakers as terrorists to facilitate genocide. So lots of supporters from the English-speaking region there on our page and giving their strong opinion about this story. So keep those comments coming in on our Facebook and we'll read them whenever we can. Let's move on now to another story here in Europe. The leaders of Russia, Turkey and Iran, key players on opposite sides of the Syrian civil war, say they are determined to speed up efforts to bring stability and protect civilians there.
Now, the Russia-Turkey-Iran summit comes a day after U.S. President Donald Trump said he wanted U.S. troops to get out of Syria. Benita Van Eysen reports.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and Iran's President Hassan Rouhani were speaking in Ankara during a second round of talks on the crisis. During the summit, Rouhani accused the U.S. of supporting Islamic State militants in Syria, but Putin on Wednesday said the organization had been defeated. They pledged to continue their efforts to ensure a lasting ceasefire, calm on the ground, and the protection of civilians in Syria's four so-called de-escalation zones. The conflict, which began in March 2011, has claimed an estimated 500,000 lives and displaced millions. Putin, Erdogan, and Rouhani last met in Russia in November, 6 months after agreeing a plan that calls for an end to fighting between Syrian rebels and forces backing al-Assad in four parts of the country. These so-called de-escalation zones, which are mainly held by opposition forces and is home to more than 2.5 million people, saw a marked reduction in hostilities after the deal. The Russia-Turkey-Iran summit came a day after U.S. President Donald Trump said he wanted U.S. troops to get out of Syria. However, on Wednesday, he said he will keep U.S. troops a little longer in the war-ravaged nation. The U.S. and its allies in the West have closely watched the warming of relations between Moscow and Ankara.
Benita van Aysen with that report.
Now, Crispin, moving on. The European Union Observer Mission in Sierra Leone has commended the National Electoral Commission for consistently executing its duties professionally, even when political parties and state institutions provoked and potentially sabotaged its reputation.
Now, the country is in a standstill as it awaits results of the hotly contested presidential runoff vote. On Tuesday, students took to the streets protesting the time they have been out of school because of the elections. DW correspondent Muratala Kamara has been describing to me the mood in the country and the impact the delay in announcing the results is having on the people.
The situation is still tensed, you know, because people, we are expecting the National Electoral Commission, you know, to announce the results, you know, for the runoff today, this afternoon. But the latest reports we are getting is that the ruling, the incumbent, you know, All People's Congress Party has requested that the Electoral Commission, you know, should recount, you know, votes in the Southeast, which is considered, you know, a stronghold, you know, of the opposition party. They said they need to recount. They are not too sure. They need to recount those votes, you know, before they announce the final result. I've been talking to some Sierra Leoneans on the delay for the announcement of the results, and this is what they had to say.
People are afraid. Every political party, I mean the APC and the SAPP, are claiming victory in this runoff election. So everything is standstill as of now in Sierra Leone.
Delay is dangerous. Like for us, the business people, everything stands still. There is no business. No business is moving for now. Everything stands still just like that. And like us, we don't have any reserve. What we say for the day is that we survive on. The children ask us, Daddy, I want to eat. Like for me, if I don't have, I just leave the home like that. I leave the children and their mother. Dude, we are begging NEC to come up with the results, please.
Sierra Leoneans expressing their frustrations over the delay in announcing election results.
Now, Crispin, back to our top story about the Cameroonian government releasing some of the hostages. Well, there's some still live comments coming through. Wilfred Table says, if they are claiming to have rescued those persons, why has it been so difficult for them to rescue the social affairs delegates and others that the so-called Ambazonian forces arrested?
Very interesting comment there. And we have another one from Prosperity J, also live on our Facebook page. And he says, all those French propaganda to label our people terrorists.
And indeed, there are so many other comments coming through. And as time allows, we'll be definitely going through some of them.
That's right. We still have some other comment coming in. One here from a guy who calls himself Menti Westberg. And he says, Cameroon government is trying to paint the separatist movement black to gain international support.
Well, another one, Clinton Achiriatem says, I'm not an activist, but as a neutral person, I think the government kidnapped them and now it's attributed to the so-called separatists. It's sad to see people die, both civilians and military.
So many comments coming in. Enrique Angelo asks, so those foreigners disappeared on their own? Another question, Mark.
So many questions and I'm not sure we can answer all of them, Chris.
Absolutely not. But obviously we welcome your comments on our Facebook page. Keep the debate going on. And of course, whenever we can, we'll read those comments live on Africa Link.
Now, in case you just joined us, you're listening to Africa Link live on air on Facebook. Feel free to join us live with your comments, opinions and suggestions, and we'll read some of them when we can.
And still to come...
Wow! It's not possible, and I cannot cheat myself that I can go to school for 1 month and then I assume that I've done a unit. That's a big lie. The government must act this time around and take back lecturers to class.
Kenyan police used tear gas to break up a protest by lecturers and students.
And we take you to Mali, where the political narrative is slowly being transformed by the younger generation.
That's right. But first, let's head to Kenya, where police used tear gas to break hundreds of striking lecturers and students. The demonstrators who brought traffic to a standstill were demanding for an already negotiated agreement with the government to be implemented.
They also demanded the sacking of new education minister Amina Mohamed, who they accused of sleeping on the job. DW's Andrew Vasike was on the streets with the dawn and filed this report.
Kenya's police fired tear gas to disperse close to 500 lecturers who are joined by scores of students calling on the Kenyan government to honor a pay hike negotiated in a 2017 collective bargaining agreement. The salary increment deal, which is yet to be implemented, expires in 2021. No learning has taken place in all the 31 public universities in Kenya for close to a semester now, following a breakdown in talks between the government and the lecturers. The university dons held placards and chanted slogans as they vowed not to return to work until their grievances are heard and demands on their pay hike met. Muga Kolale is the Secretary General of the university's academic staff union, UASU. He says that Kenya's education minister, Amina Mohamed, should be fired from her post.
She made promises that she has not fulfilled. That's why we are going to her office to remind her that she has failed the universities. The state is responsible. We are victims of state ineptitude, inefficacy, and irresponsibility. We have got the right to go on trial. Students have got the right to demand. They should not demand that lecturers should resume. They should petition the state.
Joseph Mberia, a lecturer, vowed to keep the pressure, arguing that other public workers, such as secondary and primary school staff, and most civil servants are receiving their salary increment as negotiated in the 2017-2021 collective bargaining agreement.
Why is it that when it comes to public university, that is when the wage is high? When they were awarding the other public sectors, and we are all serving the same government, where did they leave the public university? So there is money. Kenya is rich, but they are stealing every other circuit. So when it comes to workers, we must be paid. We are not stealing. We are asking for our right to pay. If they don't pay, we stay on strike, even if it takes 2 years.
Adende Charles, a third-year student from Kenyatta University, has been staying home for months now. He says that since the salary dispute kicked off, learning has been completely paralyzed, something that has affected his education, forcing him to go back home.
I'm in now third year, and I could have graduated next year. But now, due to all this, it's not possible. And I cannot cheat myself that I can go to school for 1 month, and then I assume that I've done a unit. That's a big lie. The government must act this time round and take back lecturers to class. Thank you so much.
And that report was compiled by Andrew Wasike in Nairobi. And Eddie, you could almost sense and feel the anger, the frustration in the demonstrators, the students and the lecturers.
You couldn't be wrong about that, Crispin. And I mean, the lecturers have to definitely go back to class. The last clip you heard was someone who thought he would have graduated much earlier, but because the lecturers were not in class, he has still not graduated. I feel that the government are very concerned about this, of course. Make sure that the lecturers are back in class. Give them what they need. They need more pay. That's fair enough, isn't it?
That's true. And they have already signed the deal with the government, so
exactly.
There's no point of delaying their salaries. Anyway, let's keep the debate going on our Facebook Live.
On the spot.
Now, we always talk about changing African narratives, and some young Africans are doing just that. In July, Mali will elect a new president. The current head of state, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, is 72 years old, and many of the other candidates are in the 50-70 age bracket. Like most old politicians, they get most of their ideas from their age mates and hardly any young people.
And that's where the story begins. On the second weekend of March, a brand new movement was launched called Let's Transform Mali. The people behind it are young and determined to make sure that the ideas get through to the political leadership of their country ahead of the election. DW correspondent Bram Postumus went out to meet them.
Nous avons l'énergie, le génie, le potentiel, la créativité.
With a slick promotion video, the movement Let's Transform Mali, or Transformons le Mali, announced itself to the great Malian public in the month of March. We are young, they say, we're ambitious, and we're here. But who are they? Here's one of the driving forces behind Let's Transform Mali, Khadija Maiga.
On parlait entre jeunes.
We have been busy since forever discussing our dreams with friends, what we want from life, things we'd like to change. You know, there are lots of things that don't work well in Mali. There is terrorism, there is poverty, a lack of everything. But we also know that there is this other Mali. There are many people who are prepared to take this country forward, and they're not prepared to wait for others to do the job for them.
All right, so what have the minds behind this movement come up with?
What did we do? We created the first platform for participative democracy in Africa. All you need to do is go online, find our website transformonslemali.org and post your ideas.
This is how it works. You go to the website, as Khadija Maiga explained, and there you will find all the basic info about the platform, and they'll tell you how you can post your ideas for a better Mali. And then?
C'est aller au sein des régions, au sein du cœur du Mali.
We'll take your ideas to the heart of Malian politics.
Faire des choses concrètes pour le pays.
Says Khadija Maiga, because that's the idea. Let's Transform Mali is not a think tank where your ideas will gather dust on a desk. Behind the scenes, groups of young people are working to turn these ideas into policy proposals that they will discuss with the candidates for the upcoming presidential elections. That's the first objective, influence the elections. But Mali is big, and large parts of it are unsafe. Can this movement reach the entire country? Here's spokesman Sheikh Ndiaye.
L'ambition est de couvrir l'ensemble du territoire.
The ambition is to cover the entire country, but it's true. We have to deal with the reality on the ground. In physical terms, we may be unable to reach certain parts of the country. But thanks to the internet, people in Gao and in Timbuktu can use WhatsApp, Facebook and Twitter to get through to us.
Since the website went live earlier this year, it has received some 200 ideas. And some pretty important endorsements, like the man who runs Mali's international investment agency, Moussa Ismaïla Touré.
The people who created this movement set it up and made it happen and had to believe in it, and they did.
And what about the skeptics, those who don't believe in the idea?
We need those skeptics. They give us the energy we need to prove that this is possible. We have seen transformations elsewhere, so why not here? We will make every effort to ensure that it becomes a reality.
Que ce soit réalité.
Libérer les initiatives, refonder l'avenir. Alors ensemble, transformons le Mali.
Bram Postumus with that package. Interesting package indeed, Crispin.
It is, because it just shows you how much young people are determined to change the political landscape or narrative of their countries, using especially the power of social media.
Exactly. Such young people like James Hatagua, who is tuned in live now, saying on the Sierra Leone story, the government in Sierra Leone wants to rig the election. An interesting one from James.
Very, very interesting. And on the Cameroonian story, where the government claims to have freed about 18 captives, mm-hmm. we still have comments coming in. One from Teke Blasius, who says, lies, big lies from the government. So obviously, some people are not convinced by the government's statement.
Not at all. Many comments coming through, so keep them coming. And when we have time, of course, we'll be reading them live on air.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, 8 months ago, the Kenyan government imposed a ban on plastic bags. It is now considering putting in another ban on plastic bottles. But what about electronic waste? Most Kenyans are not even aware of this type of waste, as most of them think that it is only considered trash.
And some have even gone to the extent of throwing away their old laptops, phones, among others, to the environment. And as DW's Rhoda Odhiambo reports, Kenya has only three plants that are licensed to handle e-waste. Unfortunately, they hardly have any work to do because of lack of awareness and policies on how to dispose e-waste.
This is the Nairobi River. Once a pleasing sight to watch, has now become badly contaminated to the extent of producing bad odor. Though Kenya recently banned the use of plastic bags, the presence of electronic waste and plastic bottles in water bodies is exposing Kenyans to health risks because the chemicals in these pollutants find their way to crops that people eventually consume. Colin Swambogu, who repairs laptops and phones, tells me why people keep old electronics in their homes.
Sometimes you cannot find a certain spare part in shops, so we have to buy old electronics that people store in their houses to remove the spare parts. Each item goes for around 1,000 Kenyan shillings, which is equivalent to 10 euros.
Collins tells me that despite his knowledge on the dangers of storing such waste, he has no option but to keep them until the entire waste is somewhat cleared by a client in need of a repair.
Actually, ni kama hiyo waste haibakingi. Unless iko ni mzee sana.
That e-waste is taken by the client unless it is very old. Then we have no choice but to dispose it. Those dead batteries belong to the client, so if he wants it, I will give it to him. But if the government can put up a company where we can dispose e-waste, that would help a lot.
According to a recent study conducted by the United Nations Environmental Programme, UNEP, Kenya generates over 44,000 tons of e-waste annually. Hazardous compounds found in this waste have strong neurodevelopmental and neurobehavioral effects, especially in children who are more vulnerable to the complications of e-waste after being exposed to it. I'm visiting the site of the waste electrical and electronic equipment, one of the few companies licensed to handle e-waste, which is located in Nairobi. Boniface Mbithi, the general manager, says a large proportion of the waste they handle comes from government facilities.
The biggest challenge when it comes to e-waste management is lack of awareness. Most people don't even know what e-waste stands for. The other challenge that we face is the lack of legislation, proper laws to compel people or to guide people on how they're supposed to dispose e-waste. So it's like we have to go begging people to dispose e-waste, which should not be the case.
Most Kenyans usually dispose their e-waste in dustbins, on the streets, gardens, or even in water bodies, which is wrong. With no legislation in place, even government offices find it hard to get rid of their e-waste because there's no policy on how to properly manage e-waste. The law in question has been languishing on the shelves of Parliament since 2013, something Bithi finds regrettable.
I would not say that having the law will make people dispose of e-waste properly, but it will assist. What will make people dispose of e-waste properly is them taking responsibility.
So before you think about disposing that old laptop, phone, microwave, or any other outdated electronic waste in your house, think about the environment and what your actions may do to you and your neighbor.
Rhoda Odhiambo with that report in Nairobi.
Now, I'm not sure if it's the same Rhoda Odhiambo, Crispin, but whoever it is the namesake. And she has commented on our live stream, says, sadly, the only way Kenyans can get a pay hike is through demonstration. We're all affected in this strike. It's so sad. The last time I was in class was last year. These industrial actions are just uncalled for.
And that's a comment referring to the story that we just aired about the protests, the lecturers and the students earlier on. Now let's move to Nigeria. President Buhari has released or has approved the release of $1 billion to fight Boko Haram. And Jim Scott says on our Facebook page, the money has already been shared. God punish Buhari and company.
Not sure if I'm supposed to be laughing, but that was an interesting one. Livingston Teta says, since the president is a former military leader, he can supervise the procurement process, specification, and also type of arms needed.
And Uday Amakor says, to fight the same Boko Haram, he intends to give amnesty, the same Boko Haram he claims to have defeated. This is very funny.
Yeah, I mean, you can understand people's concerns. There's been earlier reports about money's not really being spent as they should. So, yeah, you can understand people not being sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's so many cases of corruption and investigations of corruption scandals. I think people are just fed up in Nigeria with all this. Anyway, you've been good company. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Until tomorrow, bye for now.